From KCPW in Salt Lake City, I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. If you're a reader in this town, you've undoubtedly browsed the aisles of the venerable Sam Weller's Bookstore on Main Street. It's a Salt Lake institution with new hardbacks, used paperbacks, cookbooks, picture books, rare books, Mormon themes, biographies, mysteries, and more stacked up to the rafters and filling a glorious labyrinthine basement. But the Sam Weller story is changing, and today on the program, Tony and Catherine Weller are with us to talk about a name change, memories on Main Street, and a bookselling industry in transition. Plus, tis the season for giving. We'll check in with a few local nonprofits about Utah's philanthropic climate and the level of need out there this year. All that and your calls after the news. Good morning, I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. To quote the comedian Jerry Seinfeld, a bookstore is one of the only pieces of evidence we have that people are still thinking. Fortunately, Salt Lake is not losing one of those pieces of evidence, but the evidence is changing a bit. After the first of the year, Sam Weller's bookstore will be moving from Main Street to Trolley Square. And it's also getting a new name, becoming Weller Bookworks, a new location and a continued dedication to books. It is on the agenda for today's discussion. Joining me in studio, Tony Weller, co-owner of Weller Bookworks. He's been on the boards of the Downtown Alliance, Salt Lake Chamber, Vest Pocket Coalition, and is a former president of the Salt Lake Downtown Merchants Association. He's also an associate member of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America. And Tony Weller joins me in studio. Tony, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Also with us, Catherine Weller, co-owner at Weller Bookworks, and she's served on the board of directors and as president of the Mountains and Plains Independent Bookseller Association. She's also been on the board of the Booksellers Advisory Council for the American Booksellers Association, and she received the Gordon Saul Bookseller of the Year Award in 2009, and Catherine Weller is here with us as well. Catherine, hi.
Hey, good morning.
Up next, later in the program, we're going to be checking in with some local charities and see how they're faring this season. But first, the past, present, and future of Sam Weller's. What memories do you have of Sam Weller's books on Main Street, and what are you hoping for in the new Trolley Square location? 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. First off, congratulations to you both on this next phase of your business and your life. As I mentioned, you're in the final days at your Main Street location. You're changing your name. You're moving to a brand new store. We're going to get to all these little tidbits in a bit, but these must be very exciting and nerve-wracking times for you both.
Oh, yeah. It's a whole lot of change all at once. And while it's change we've been planning for a little more than 3 years now, or about 3 years now, all of a sudden it is looming large, I think, both for us and for the community.
Sure. Tony, your grandfather got into the bookselling business in the 1920s. Books have been in your blood since you were born. What was it like growing up in a bookstore?
Well, I mistook it for ordinary for a lot of years, but later in life I realized it was rather special and unusual. I'm the only child in the family, and so my community of adults was dominated by people who were involved in the book trade. Without paying special attention to them, I remember, Wallace Stegner and on one occasion Charles Schulz and Ansel Adams and these people just kind of hanging around my dad. And they just seemed like other grown-ups, and it was pretty special though. And by the time I entered college, I realized I'd been reared in a community of people who were extra well informed, extremely creative, free of bigotry to a larger degree than others, visionary and peculiar people.
Your father, Sam, was legendary. I think he became an icon in this community, and he built such a successful business that was known internationally. Were books his first love as well?
I'm not sure. I wasn't around when he was a kid. His father opened the store when he was 9 years old, and it was a big poor family. He was forced to work there, so it's hard to say if it became a part of his reality because he worked there. I don't know. I know that by the time he returned from World War II and the bookstore had grown a bit, he settled pretty comfortably into the role of the bookman downtown and seemed to relish it. I used to joke that he didn't know who he was when he wasn't standing in his bookstore. But I can't describe his childhood.
What can you ascribe? What can you say about his success? What made him so successful at the bookselling business?
Well, I think in addition to having a good memory for books, he was an extremely outgoing and gregarious man. He loved people, and so he just had this sincere enthusiasm every time somebody walked in the door, and that combined with his knowledge of books, you know, put him in a good position to pass those books on to readers, and they loved him. I met many people over the years who said, "Oh, I'm a really good friend of your dad's." I mean, hundreds of people who were really good friends of my dad. And sometimes I'd mention their name to him, and he couldn't quite remember their name, but it was certain that if they walked into the bookstore, he'd remember their face.
So just a warm, generous person, a little fiery at times, loyal.
Well, he was passionate. Yeah, he was also an extremely hard worker, a fast-moving and a hot-tempered man.
What was it like coming into this book-selling family, Kat?
It was actually a lot easier than I think a lot of people would imagine. Sam really prized connections with people, and family was very important to Sam. So when I became part of the family, I was accepted by him and by Lila, his wife, as a Weller. So it was very easy that way. I remember early on people would say, kind of concernedly, what's it like going out with Sam's son? Or what is like, what's it like being married to Sam's son? Because they've witnessed various Sam episodes over the years. And I would say, well, Tony's a different person. And in a lot of ways, temperamentally, I'm more like Sam than Tony is. So that was never really a concern for me. It was more interesting moving into the bookselling family that is the employees, the community, because in a lot of ways, Wellers and the people who work there are a family. Mm. And I had to prove myself to them. I was a hard worker, and I learned fast, and so Sam didn't have a problem with me, but I had to prove myself to the staff. It's so that I didn't have the reputation of being just, you know, another family member coming in, or a family member coming in on the basis of being a family member who couldn't do anything.
Sure, sure. Now, Sam worked well into his 80s, I believe.
No, he, 97, he was, 76, he lost his eyesight.
Okay.
And that is, that's what prompted his retirement.
But he was a fixture in the store for years and years and years. And so I imagine that changing the store's name was a process, you know, wondering where you should go, given his reputation in the bookselling community, in the community at large. It must have been a little tricky to navigate. Can you talk about that process a little bit?
Well, yes. We thought about it very carefully. And
what tipped you over the edge? Why did you decide to change your name?
Well, I noticed a decreasing number of people who had been influenced or touched directly by my father. And I love that guy. But as the time elapsed between his retirement and the present, a smaller number of people remembered Sam. We also noticed it has a literary connection that most people don't recognize anymore, but they would have 50 years ago. And that is that Sam Weller is a main character in the Pickwick Papers, Charles Dickens' first notable book. I'm a minor character in the Pickwick Papers. And this used to be wonderful fun when people knew it, but when people don't know it, it's just nothing. But we also knew that that reputation of Sam Weller, although it started on Second South, the biggest reputation of his was on Main Street. Mm. And the only of our four stable locations that ever had his name on it was the one on Main Street. The others were Zion Bookstore.
Oh.
And so it's not the original name. It's a secondary name for the business. We felt that we're building a new bookstore model at Trolley Square. This is a post-internet millennial kind of bookstore. It's still about the physical book, but it's not just a new location for us. It's a reconsideration of the role of the book. And we felt it wouldn't truly be fair to take that name in a store that was not designed by Sam and that many, you know, won't associate with him when we were trying to establish a new way of selling books.
Hmm. When you made your announcement of the name change, what was the reaction from people, from loyal customers, from your employees?
They were, first and foremost, of course, very nostalgic for Sam and very nostalgic for that time that was years ago, really. But there is an emotional connection there. Secondly, I think they were very pleased that we're keeping the Weller in it, that we are keeping a connection to the family and recognizing this family heritage, this very rich heritage that, of course, we would be fools to leave behind, and we can't leave behind. There, I have to say, there are a few people that really wonder what in the world we're doing, but a lot of people do get it. You know, that store on Main Street, that is Sam Weller's. He was the perfect bookman in the perfect place at the perfect time. It was a confluence of events that was really hard to duplicate, but bookselling, as Tony alluded to, has changed so much. It's very different. There are very few businesses that do business the same way they did 30 years ago, but that is what people expect from Sam Weller's. And once you start talking with them about that, then they begin to see, yeah, this is just another step in the evolution of the bookstore. Just like the store started as Zion's and it only sold used books, and then it moved to Main Street, and then it became Sam Weller's. This is another step in what it takes to keep a business going.
Mm. Kat Weller is co-owner of Weller Bookworks. Also with us, Tony Weller, another co-owner of Weller Bookworks. And we're talking about the evolution of the bookstore. If you'd like to join us, 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. One of the distinguishing factors of the Sam Weller's on Main is that, you know, books are in every nook and cranny. It's half the fun is, you know, wandering through the stacks like you would at any grand old bookstore. I'm curious, you say that this is going to be a new model. What's the look and feel going to be like of the new Weller Bookworks at Trolley Square?
Well, we still will have a lot of books. I mean, it's a big space. For those who are worried about size, it'll be in footage roughly equivalent to our full main floor and our mezzanine, including our rare book areas, will be the size of it.
So we can still wander.
Yes, and we've tried to make a very fun environment. I can hardly wait to get people in there. We had one tweet saying it might be the coolest retail space in the city. I'm not sure it is, but we sure thank that person who thought this. But more importantly, we're going to pack as many books as we can into there. It's a beautiful space with really high ceilings. The main floor will be about 50% bigger than our present main floor, and it's wrapped around a yet uncommitted space that is intended for an eatery or a coffee shop of some sort. The mezzanine is about a third the size of our present mezzanine. We'll have entrances on two levels. Rare book room will have direct entrance from the second floor. And the rest of the store will be on the main floor.
Mm.
Big mezzanine down one side.
One of the things that I think made Weller's a really interesting place for people was that process of discovery, with wandering around through the nooks and the crannies. And Tony pointed out, as we were trying to conceive of design of the new store early on, that it coincidentally became a metaphor for reading, for going through a book. It is a process of discovery and navigation and learning. And so we took that idea into the design of the new space. We tried to design the new space with a like sense of discovery and exploration as one goes through the space. So there's room for surprise. There's room for joy and delight, just like one would find in a book. There's room for knowledge and play. And it's kind of a cool space. Of course, we're booksellers, so we're not as wealthy as we would have liked to be. And we had to abandon some of the most marvelous ideas, but we've still managed to create a space that will be full of books and full of places to explore, I think. It's really an enchanting space.
Kat Weller, she is co-owner of Weller Bookworks, also with us Tony Weller from the same concern, and we're talking about the evolution of Weller Bookworks. If you'd like to join us, 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. We need to take a break, but we'll be right back. This is City Views on KCPW Salt Lake City. Welcome back. This is City Views. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce. Today on the program, we're reminiscing about Sam Weller's of the past and looking forward to the new Weller's Books Works of the Future. It's moving from Main Street to Trolley Square in a few days and forging a new identity as Weller Bookworks. My guests are Kat Weller and Tony Weller, and we'd love to hear your memories about Sam Weller's or thoughts about an evolving bookstore industry. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255, or send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. Let's go to the phones, and John is joining us from Salt Lake City. And John, hello.
Hello.
Go right ahead.
Hi, I always enjoyed the basement area of the downtown bookstore and the used selection. It was a huge discovery place. As you go forward, how are you looking at that? I think old books like that will become even more valuable. Anyway, I'm sure you've thought it all through. What are your thoughts on that, and how will you deal with that?
Okay. Used books, how are they going to fit into the new space? Tony?
Well, we will continue having a mix of new, used, and rare books, and I don't think we've thought so much about whether a book was new or secondhand as the subject use and expectations for the book. You know, so we've had our new and our secondhand books integrated on the shelves for almost a decade now. And so they've sat on all three floors of our store. They will continue to do that in our new store. The real differences are in the difference of, say, a reference book versus a literary book, a children's book versus a study guide, because digital books have certainly made different inroads into different areas, largely following aesthetics, use, convenience, cost, reference ability, if that's a word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think what's really going to change is not that model of new, used, and rare, but the philosophy of quality versus quantity. We've always had a huge space to fill, and especially with the secondhand books back in the day, the philosophy was the more the better. And of course, that's true today, but to a much lesser extent. So all of the buyers, both new and used, are going to be looking at the quality of the book. Buyers for used are going to be paying more attention to condition of the books, so that we have a very carefully and well-selected stock, but we would never leave the used books behind. That's too essential to our core mission.
Mm. John, good question. Thanks for the call. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. Clearly, you've got a lot of history with this Main Street storefront, but it's no secret that in recent years, it's been tough on Main Street, the construction of tracks, the lack of parking. Why is succeeding on Main Street so hard? Hard. Tony Weller?
Oh, I'll try not to use more than a minute. You know, I've loved that neighborhood, and I have to rephrase one of your comments. It's not the lack of parking. There's a load of parking. It's that
the perceived lack of parking? What is it?
Well, no, that's a misunderstanding. It's everywhere. It's that in Salt Lake, in most neighborhoods, you can park for free, and there's this little tiny area downtown where you can't. And so consumers are not very forgiving of that. But there's a load of commercial parking. It's just priced. And it's not priced cheaply necessarily. And the penalties for errors tend to be high. And so we find people prefer the street parking. Other than that, it's been a lot of years since there were stores up and down Main Street. You know, we're a remnant of an era that began to shrink in the 80s. And it's tough, you know, with the parking and the lack of retail neighbors. So, yeah. You know.
Main Street's been in transition continually since, I think, the 80s. The problems downtown preceded the tracks construction, although the tracks construction certainly exacerbated that for a while. The problems downtown, at least as far as retail goes. But yeah, Main Street's undergone a tremendous transition from that dense retail core. As the city decentralized, so did retail. And it remains to be seen whether that will come back or not.
Well, I was going to ask, yeah. Because, you know, we've got this new City Creek development mm-hmm. A few blocks away from your storefront that's opening in the spring. Now there's a lot of talk of infusing millions of dollars and developing a performing arts center on Main Street. Did that give you any misgivings? Like, well, maybe we should hold out. Maybe we should wait.
No, we would go out of business if we waited. We've waited since the 80s. We don't have time to wait for Main Street to come back anymore. We have really wanted and prayed for that downtown renaissance, and I think it's coming. I don't know what it'll look like, but we can't wait for it. We will be done if we do.
Okay, so you've
it's
made
pretty
this,
stark.
You've made this decision. Why Trolley Square? Tony Weller.
Well, we started with a checklist of what we wanted for the location of our bookstore. And Trolley Square, after two tough years of evaluating properties, matched more of the qualities that we wanted than any other property that we could feasibly get a hold of. We like Trolley Square because it is very close to neighborhoods where we believe there are a lot of readers, mm-hmm. Educated demographics, and people who want books. The avenues, the University District, Central City, Sugar House, the East Bench. This is super convenient to these areas. Trolley Square came to us. You know, we didn't approach them. They were a little further east than we intended originally. But they continued to pursue us all through our search for real estate with deals that got a bit better and a bit better. We like the architecture of the mall. It's got more character, we believe, than any other mall in the valley. We get free parking. Parking was a non-negotiable trait. We said we will not move to a place where we cannot provide free parking one way or another. And we were hoping to buy a building. We took a lease here. And so, you know, that was one compromise we had to make. But what have I left out?
The local businesses that are in there. There are some very well-respected, long-standing local businesses in Trolley Square. And we're hoping that we can join that community and help that community build more local businesses into Trolley Square. There's a wonderful community of local business owners there that we're proud to be a part of. Mm. It'll be nice to be part of a retail community again.
This email from Nancy Tessman, who writes, I'm listening to the show from Maine and just wanted to extend congratulations and best wishes to the Wellers on this new and quite inspired new direction. We all miss Sam, but he would be proud and delighted to watch this exciting new concept come to life. Like everyone else, we will miss seeing you on Main Street, but the choice of Trolley Square is a great one, and I look forward to visiting when we return next June. That's from Nancy Tessman. 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255. We're talking to Kat Weller and Tony Weller, co-owners of Weller Bookworks, which is leaving Main Street in just a couple of days and relocating to Trolley Square. Didn't mean to remind you of the work ahead, but let's go back to the phones and let's see, who is this? This is Larry from Salt Lake City. Larry, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
I remember Sam back. I used to drive up my 56 Chevy convertible with the top down, and a lot of times Sam would even walk out and say, how are you doing today? Come on in. I've got just the book for you, and explain all the new books that were related to what I wanted, and even introduce me to a lot of really neat books. and or used. Sometimes he'd even call me on the phone. He had my phone number, knew my birthday. I knew I went to the University of Utah, and knew my parents were from Southern Utah. And he'd say, well, I've got these new... He didn't call me on the phone and say, I've got these two new used books. You know, I'd come in, I know you'd be interested. And I'd go in, and he knew my birthday was in May the 26th, and I'd go in around about that time, and he said, well, I know it's your birthday. Pick out a book. You know, wouldn't even charge me for it, you know, and say, and oh, it's great. You know, if you'd buy 10 or 15 books, he'd give you a nice big discount. And you could bring your friends in and them the same way. And just a wonderful guy. And
sounds like you've got some good memories of Sam Weller's bookstore. Are you looking forward to trying out the new Weller Bookworks at Trolley Square?
Oh, yes, I really do. I really do. And if he's got needs an extra space for some of the used books, I've got about a 2,000-square-foot basement and an apartment complex to store the books.
Well, Larry, thanks very much for the call and the memories. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. I think Larry brings up a good point, kind of that personalized service still means something in the retail setting. But as you mentioned, Kat, the book-selling industry has changed fundamentally from even 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Not only has the industry changed, downtown has changed. We don't see so many of the leisurely shoppers anymore. We see people who work downtown and they're in and out. The time for conversations with a lot of our customers is very brief. So what Larry was describing was the bookselling that we all love best. That's what we live for. Those are the interactions we want to have with our customers. And they're increasingly rare in this modern world, both because we're certainly very taxed on our end, but because our customers are taxed for time as well. One of the things we're trying to do is get back to that more. Again, to be in a space where people can slow down a bit and they can have those conversations about books, which are a lot of times as much about sharing ideas and teaching each other as they are about selling an item. One of the great things about being a bookseller is you never have learned everything. And there are people who find that enormously threatening. We find that wonderfully invigorating and challenging. So that will be one of the changes we will be trying to make within the store. The other changes in the industry are much broader and much more difficult to wrap our heads around in some ways. It's dealing with ebooks and how do you talk about people with electronic books when they're downloading them all? How do you facilitate conversation with them then? How do you even get ebooks into your store? There are some independent stores that can do that now. There still isn't a package available that's appropriate for us yet, although it's something I watch, you know, every day. Even just the amount of books that are published is changing, or how they are published is changing. When I talk with people in the publishing industry or the smartest booksellers I know, right now, nobody can see 5 years down the road. We all know there will be a place for books, for physical books, and there will still be a place for booksellers, but we don't know what that will be. Nobody can envision it yet. So what has really been driven home for us is that the ability to remain nimble is extremely important. And that's another part of our move, and another part, honestly, of getting a little bit smaller so we can be nimble and be more responsive to consumer demands.
Do you want to add something, Tony? You had a look like you wanted to jump in on the ebooks discussion or
no,
how the industry is changing.
To.
You don't
no.
want to touch it. Okay.
No.
What about online sales? Is that part of the mix for Weller Bookworks?
We'll be able to increase our online presence with Weller Bookworks, which is really wonderful. We have sold online, our used books online, through third-party vendors for a number of years now. We're working with our publicity and rebranding company. They're also doing a significant overhaul of our website. Super Top Secret is their name. And they're building a fabulous website for us where people will finally be able to see our full inventory available and purchase it through the store directly, meaning all new, which have never been online before, all used and all rare. So that's a huge step forward for us and a long time coming.
A big slice of your business is the rare book market. Tony, what is that market looking like right now? And
well, I wouldn't say it's a big slice. It's the frosting on our cake.
Okay.
It's changed a lot over the years. What the internet seems to have done is given us a very accurate or a more accurate read of the supply side of the equation of supply and demand, which is, of course, where you get value. What that tends to have done is push the price of fairly common collectible books downward, but push the price of the high points up. So it seems that maybe 90%, 95% of books are today available cheaper than they were 15 years ago, and maybe 5% have quadrupled in price. These are, you know, part of that is a speculation that has taken place because the internet also brought people who weren't dealers or collectors into the marketplace, which I think is not helpful. But, you know, such is life. and so, you know, it's pretty interesting. We just see a lot of fighting over the high points, a certain neglect over other items. But we also see an increased fetishism about books, especially in younger readers. Our ability to sell just a precious-looking copy of Pride and Prejudice or The Hobbit or some book that someone loves, it seems that the displacing effect of digital has caused some kind of a renewed affection for the beauty and the art of a book. And so, you know, I've been predicting, and as Kat said, we don't know, but we're making guesses as we design this new bookstore that future people may own fewer physical books, but the ones they own will be more beautiful, and they will value them in as cultural pieces more than they do presently.
You mentioned that the old Sam Weller's was a very communal place, a gathering place for literary types as well, just anyone who's interested in reading and learning. I remember T.C. Boyle came, you've had Brandon Sanderson, lots of authors. Will events still be part of the mix of the new Weller Bookworks?
Kat? Absolutely, yeah. Events are part of what makes a bookstore a part of the community. And that includes events that aren't necessarily author-driven. It's book groups and readings by local people or a knitting group. Any number of events will be moving into the store again. Its events have been challenging on Main Street. It has taken a special author. We've had to be quite selective in who we bring in, because nobody wants to have an author in and not have anybody show up. It's a terrible, terrible feeling, but it's tough to get people down there. That can broaden out a little bit more, and we're really looking forward to being more expansive with our events programming.
And you mentioned there, I mean, there's been a food element, Coffee Garden, in your Main Street store for I don't know how many years, but is there going to be some sort of dining experience, a beverage, something in the new space?
Oh, we are working on it. The space looks great, and we're just hoping someone will sign on. We have 1,300 square feet that is embraced by the bookstore. It opens into the bookstore in two areas, and we can hardly wait to figure that out. But in addition to, you know, we thought a lot about the bookstore as a meeting place, because clearly we also need to differentiate ourselves from online sales and bring back, you know, this, you know, maybe quixotic, but this sense of a bookstore as a place where ideas flourish, you know, conflict and fly around. We have a little meeting room in our new store. Even though it's smaller, we've carved out a space for small literary groups to meet, or, you know, staff can use it. We have one of our sections on casters, so it can be rolled out of the way for larger groups. And we have use of the atrium in front of the store for big, big literary affairs. So we've got huge versatility in the new site to bring people in.
So what's the opening day going to be for you? You're having a soft opening very quickly, January 6th. Your official grand opening is on the 13th. What's that day going to be like? Kat?
Tony and I are both at the point where every time we think about the move, we're just we breathe deeply for a moment because anybody who's been in our store knows it's a pretty daunting task to think about.
And you can't start
that.
Packing yet because you've still got 2 days
it's the
at the main
season.
Street.
Yeah, it's a wholesaler emailed me yesterday that we're certifiable for trying to move right now, but it's the way we do things. I think it's going to be really exciting. I don't know what it looks like yet. I'm trying to envision the first day I walk in. I'm usually the first one in the store in the morning. The first day I turn the key and walk into that store and flip on the lights for business. And it's really going to be something. The last day on Main Street's really going to be something, too. That'll be...
Yeah.
That's going to be bittersweet, and that first day, both the 6th and the 13th, are going to be exciting and wonderful and celebratory.
What's happening to the space on Main Street, Tony?
Well, our longstanding partners in ownership, the Daly family, Daly Management, bought our share of it, and I'm not sure what their future plans are. I understand they may be thinking of restaurants or entertainment venues because there's a huge amount of space in there. The upper floors are probably going to end up offices or studios. We, years ago, looked into seismically upgrading the building for residences, and the expense was overwhelming, probably unsupportable without dedicated parking.
Mm.
So I don't know, really.
Hmm. Well, as you look forward, I mean, brick-and-mortar stores, family-owned bookstores, you know, it's tenuous out there. What do you think will keep your concern afloat to pass on to the next generation of Wellers, to Lila Ann? How are you going to do it, Tony?
Well, we believe that books will be around for a long time to come, even if the marketplace for them is smaller. I'm encouraged to see with the Occupy Wall Street movements that an increasing number of citizens are becoming very sensitive to the difference between, you know, corporate entities and Wall Street-driven entities versus local citizens.
Well, it's predated that. The local first movements have been going on for years now, but
have.
I think they've caught on now. People are really beginning to get what makes their community. What is a community and what does it mean to be a part of a community, that local businesses do have a place in making a city livable and desirable. And I think more and more people don't want to see those go away.
Kat Weller and Tony Weller, co-owners of Weller Bookworks. It will be enjoying its last 2 days at its Main Street storefront. It closes December 24th, reopens as Weller Bookworks in Trolley Square on January 6th. Good luck to both of you, and thanks so much for your time today.
Oh, thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you.
Up next, charitable giving this holiday season, but first a break. This is City Views on KCPW Salt Lake City. Welcome back. This is City Views. I'm Jennifer Napier Pierce. A new poll conducted by the Charities Aid Foundation shows Americans are the most generous people in the world when it comes to supporting charities and volunteering time. So how are we meeting the needs here in Utah? Joining me now to talk about local trends in giving and the demand for aid is Jeanette Bott. She is Director of Marketing for the Utah Food Bank, and she joins us by phone from her home in Provo. Is that right, Jeanette?
Today, yes.
Okay. I'm glad you're here. Thanks so much for your time. Also with
you're
us,
welcome.
Glenn Bailey, Executive Director of Crossroads Urban Center, which provides basic needs for low-income and disabled Utahns, and he joins me in studio. And Glenn, hi.
Thanks for having me.
If you'd like to join us, 801-355-TALK is our number. Are you supporting a charity or two this year? Tell us about your philanthropic giving. 801-355-TALK, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. You know, it's no secret the economy has been dragging. There is a bit of good employment news out there, but no question, these are tough times for many people. I guess for both of you, what kinds of needs are you seeing this year? The demand, Jeanette Bott?
Well, we're seeing just a constant and a dedicated increase from families. It seems to be the holidays are very difficult for families. And then at the food bank and the pantries, we tend to see the summer months also as a very difficult time. The kids are out of the schools. They're not available to participate in the breakfast and lunch programs. And so the need for groceries on families increases in the summer months as well as the holiday time.
Mm. Have you seen the demands fluctuating at all this year? Is it as opposed to last year or previous years? We've been in this sluggish economy for a number of years now.
Well, there's a constant increase, and we've seen it up about 40%. And one example that I use all the time is our partner agency in Ogden, Catholic Community Services. They normally would serve 1,200 families a month, and they're up now to 2,000 families a month. So that's just one example of an increased need in our communities.
Hmm. Glenn Bailey, Crossroads Urban Center, a busy time of year for you as well. Is this what kind of need are you seeing this year as opposed to last year or previous years?
Well, as the recession has kind of dragged on, we've had a lot of needs. Our food pantry actually set the record for the most people we've ever served in a year in 2009. And in 2010, our thrift store, which gives away free clothing and household items, set their service record for free service. So this year, we've just kind of seen it level off a little bit, but still level off at a very high level of need. And we've also kind of seen a decrease in food donations this year. So we've been scrambling a little more than usual.
Mm. Can you give us a profile of the people who are looking for help right now? Do they have part-time work, or are they fully unemployed? Are these families? Are these single folk? Maybe just give us a sense of who's in need this year.
Well, the people we serve are mostly families with children. And that varies kind of between our thrift store and our pantry, but about 50% of the people we serve at the thrift store, for example, with free items, are under 18 years old. So we serve a lot of families with kids, and a lot of them are working. You know, I would say at least a third at any given time of our clientele has some income in the family from work, but aren't able to make ends meet. So, you know, the number one reason people use a food pantry is because they've just paid the rent or just paid the utilities, something that can't be avoided or there's a disaster. And then they worry about the food last, and that's where we come in.
Mm. Jeanette Bott, the food bank, of course, services pantries across the state. Are there certain geographic areas that you are finding are having specific needs right now?
Well, we always try to keep an eye on the rural communities. We've watched Carbon County the last few months. They seem to be struggling there with some layoffs in some of the coal mines. We're also seeing that some of the communities that are very small don't have the capabilities to maintain pantries, so they're having to close pantries in those communities and travel to the nearest town who has that facility. So it's becoming more difficult for families to get help as the economy is having a bigger impact.
Hmm. We're speaking with Jeanette Bott, Director of Marketing for the Utah Food Bank. Also with us, Glenn Bailey, Executive Director of Crossroads Urban Center. And we're talking about the needs this time of year and about charitable giving. If you'd like to join us, 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. Joining us now on the phone as well is Major Richard Green. He is Salt Lake Basin Coordinator for the Salvation Army of Utah. And Major Green, thanks so much for your time today.
Well, thank you for letting us have the opportunity to speak with your listening public. That's great.
So what kind of response are you seeing to your Red Kettle campaign, which I believe kicks off shortly after Thanksgiving? It's one of your big fundraisers. How are you doing so far this year?
Actually, our Red Kettle campaign, we're not doing well. We're currently at about 16% down from the previous years. A lot of that, it's really been just down in cash donations. It's picked up the last week, and we're hoping that these last few days before Christmas will make up a big difference for us.
Why do you think it's been slow, Major Green?
Well, you know, a lot of times when people who are shopping are hurting, then they're more empathetic with those as we're ringing our bell and they reach in their pockets and they give a few more dollars and a couple more times. When they're feeling secure and okay and it's not a hurt for them to give, they have a tendency not to be as concerned about the people who we represent with our red bills, our red kettles. That's my assumption. You know, it's one of those things where if I'm hurting, others must really be hurting, and if I'm okay, hey, they should be all right.
Glenn Bailey, how have you seen things on the donation end of your organization, Crossroads Urban Center?
Well, I would say it's a little bit of a slow year for us. And like the major says, you know, I think there's a lot to his theory about this. We don't really know from year to year why people give more or less. We have a lot of really loyal supporters. And in the beginning of the recession, in particular, I think people made a real extra effort to give. They knew there were a lot of people hurting, and they really wanted to respond to that, even if they had less to give. As the recession drags on, we may be experiencing a little bit of donor fatigue, where people have been giving, doing the extra thing for years, and it just wears you out, I think. So I think, you know, we'll be okay. We have extremely loyal donors, a very caring community, but it is a bit of a slow year.
Sure. And that makes it tough, extra tough, when there's increased demand out there. Jeanette Bott, how's the Utah Food Bank doing?
Well, we're down in food donations. We're seeing a slower year there. We're also down in cash, but a huge increase in the desire for folks to volunteer. I think they're definitely willing to give time when they can't give food or cash. But I think probably one of the saddest things for us to watch is that some of our folks who were donors last year have had to be recipients of the programs this year. So we, too, are seeing a little bit of a different change in the giving process with our clientele.
Major Green, did you have something to add there?
Actually, I do. You know, our Angel Tree program really did super well this year. People did, in fact, spend more. They bought more angels and purchased the individual private gifts. So that was a much better response by the community, which, and I agree that the Salt Lake community has always supported us. We have a lot of loyal donors who will keep us moving. Our Christmas and winter relief money helps us throughout the year, helps us to make sure and make it through the winter months. So, but it is, we're experiencing a lot more of the material donations, and the volunteers this year were just really great as well. As they said at the food bank, we've had a tremendous, was our need for volunteers.
We're speaking with Major Richard Green, who is with the Salvation Army of Utah. Also with us, Jeanette Bott, Director of Marketing for the Utah Food Bank, and Glenn Bailey with Crossroads Urban Center. And we're checking in with local charities and seeing what the needs are and what the capacity to donate is. 801-355-TALK if you have questions or comments, and we'll go to the phones. Charles is with us from Salt Lake. Charles, hi.
Good morning. And this is a wonderful topic to be discussing around this time of year. I'll start out with a comment and then a question. About 5 years ago, my family and I, we began the process of, instead of buying the silly little trinkets that you end up buying for yourself and your siblings and your loved ones over the holidays, we began a program where we adopted a family that was in need. And 2 years prior to each Christmas, we drop off Christmas to the family. There is such a sense of joy and giving that comes from that. Also, there's a lessening of the stress around the holidays, because we realize that anything that we can do to help somebody else out is really the true meaning of what this all is supposed to be about. And so after that comment, my question is, with the economic downturn, with the loss of a lot of local businesses that may have a more intimate understanding of the needs of a community here in Utah, as opposed to the needs of a community, say, in Portland, Maine, or Omaha, Nebraska, have the people who work with families that are in need noticed the contributions from businesses decrease, because you have a lot more corporate businesses that deal with the community from an ivory tower, if you will?
Sure. Charles, it's a good question, and thanks very much for the call. Glenn Bailey, have you seen, not only individuals, but businesses are on hard times too. Are you seeing contributions from local businesses stagger a little bit as well?
Well, Businesses, actually, that's held up for us pretty well, because even when there's a corporate office in some far-flung place, there's usually a group of people working in Salt Lake City. So very often, you know, they will get together and do something as a branch, and that's very helpful. And sometimes you can apply to the corporations for gifts. I think it's a good point, though, that, you know, the further away the decision makers are from Salt Lake City, the harder it is for them to understand the situation that people are dealing with here.
Sure. Sadly, our time is up. We've been speaking with Glenn Bailey, Executive Director of Crossroads Urban Center, Major Richard Green from the Salvation Army of Utah, and Jeanette Bott from the Utah Food Bank. And thanks very much for all of your time. We'll put links on our website if you want to know how to contribute to these causes or others at kcpw.org. City Views is a production of KCPW News. Jesse Ellis is our technical director. Ryan Cron composed our theme music. And you can continue the discussion, of course, online at kcpw.org. We're taking off next week for the holidays, but we'll be back live on January 3rd. Thanks so much for listening, and best wishes to you and yours for a safe and happy holiday season. For City Views, I'm Jennifer Napier Pierce.